Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Today marks the opening of the Guthrie Green, a new full long block park in the heart of the Brady District funded by the George Kaiser Family Foundation. Equipped with an outdoor theater, an open green, fountains, and a cafe, the Green is set to become a new Tulsa gathering spot. And with a busy music and arts schedule already in place, it will be a major addition to Tulsa's growth as an urban community. The open weekend will give Tulsans a true taste of the possibilities of this new space. There'll be performances all weekend long by local musicians and arts groups, as well as performances by the Tulsa Symphony Orchestra and a performance by the Wailers. And the best part is all the entertainment this weekend and future entertainment will be free. I'm joined today by Shirley Elliott, the program director of the Tulsa Performing Arts Center Trust. The Trust will be maintaining the programming for the new Guthrie Green, and one of their partners of Tulsa Roots Music, Julie Watson, who have already announced an ambitious schedule of Sunday afternoon concerts in the Green throughout the fall. The Guthrie Green opens this weekend, and there are guests today on Studio Tulsa. Shirley and Julie, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us. Well, this is a big weekend for the city and for the Tulsa Performing Arts Center Trust and Tulsa Roots Music. The Guthrie Green finally opens. It's been under construction for some time. For those who don't know where the Guthrie Green is and what the facilities are, Shirley, can you just explain about the park?
Sure. The Guthrie Green is located in the Brady Arts District, which is just north of our downtown area. It's actually at the intersection of North Cincinnati and Brady. So it's one square city block bordered by Boston, Cincinnati, Cameron, and Brady Streets.
Yeah, and actually the big development, redevelopment of the Matthews Automotive Building, which is going to house about three or four different arts groups.
More than that, I think. Yeah. It's actually two buildings together, the old Tulsa Paper Company and the Matthews Building.
That is just south.
Just south of the park, yeah. Exactly. And so this, Channel 6 is building a new facility
just north
of the park.
That's right. Now, this was an old warehouse at one point, I think. And
it was the last incarnation of it was a parking lot. There was trucks parked there. Mm-hmm. But when they started construction, they dug out think about 20 old oil tanks from underneath. Wow. So it's had a long history in that district, and that district's had a long history of different kinds of neighborhoods and so on through
there. And so it has been transformed into a large grassy area, a stage, outdoor amphitheater, trees surrounding the whole the whole facility, and then there's a little pavilion at the back.
Yeah, we're calling that area the dock because it used to be a loading dock. And when construction began, there was an old dock there in that very spot.
Huge piece of concrete,
right. But as they started working, that dock was determined it wasn't really stable enough to keep, so they built a new one in the same spot and same size, same footprint. And it's so that's where there'll be a small restaurant. And Matt Kelly is putting in Lucky's from 15th Street. It's this will be called Lucky's on the Green, with small gourmet menu, affordable sandwiches, some very interesting things. He's got a cotton candy machine he's putting in. So it's going to be really fun, park and delicious fare. And then there's outdoor seating in that area and public restrooms.
Now, the George Kaiser Family Foundation was the driving force behind this park.
Yes.
What was the aim of the foundation and now, you know, with the partnership with the trust, what was the aim for this park? What do we hope to achieve with this? I mean, other than just being a beautiful downtown park, which is always a great addition.
Well, that area has been historic, you know, for a long time. Some of the great old buildings are still standing in that area. It's been an emerging arts district for many years. Many of the arts organizations have been there for a long time. So when the project began, it, along with the Tulsa Paper Company and Matthews Building project, that seemed to be a perfect place to put kind of a warm spot among all the buildings. And so a park, a place where people could refresh from concrete and brick, seemed to be a logical choice. And it's been some really wonderful ideas behind that whole concept.
Now, you mentioned warm spot. As I understand it, that's also the place where the geothermal went in to house heating and air for
For the Matthews complex.
Yeah,
exactly.
The complex.
Part of the early construction, as I said, was tearing out all the old and then putting in the geothermal wells that are underneath the park, which will help power the Matthews building. And, you know, the little pavilion we talked about is covered with a roof that when you sit there and look up, you'll see it's all solar panels. So that's also another green aspect. Another really beautiful part that they've created, when you walk through the park, you'll see these areas that are river stone, a beautiful gray river stone throughout the park with some plants and so on in there. And those are called bioswales. And this is where rainwater will be cleaned before it goes into the sewage areas. So it's a really wonderful green park in both environmental aspect and also as a place for people to go and sit and gather.
Well, and I think that's one of the aims is just like currently they have architects looking at the site on Riverside as the new gathering place. This is also designed to be a gathering place. And I assume, like in a lot of cities, there will be a spot like that where either the city or some public-minded entity basically presents music and cultural events all throughout the year. You know, in Chicago, it's along Grant Park and the Gary Amphitheater. You know, in Boston, it's right by next to City Hall. And most cities have a place like this. Is this the aim for this particular park?
Yes, to have free entertainment and things for people to do. And because it's in an arts district, I think our philosophy and our aim will be to create numerous activities there that'll be of interest to people, that there'll always be something interesting going on. So, of course, there'll be a lot of music. And our plan right now is no ticketed events. We want everything to be free and open to the public. We want to bring in touring acts, which Julie and Tulsa Roots are involved in, but also to showcase a lot of our local musicians, our young generation of musicians.
I could see it being a very interesting festival site, you know, for small festivals, not, you know, huge festivals, or it could be a part of a larger festival in downtown, but, you know, the Hispanic festival, it could be very much centered
sure.
on
in
this
location.
Sure, and
we've had a lot of interest from sporting events to music festivals and so on, people wanting to have that as their headquarters for their events in the future. So,
and you mentioned an important point is that you're about partnering too, and that's where Tulsa Roots Music comes in.
Oh, yeah. I think that it would be very difficult for us to do everything, and it would be
monotonous. And us, you mean
monotonous.
The trust.
Right.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be a place where we are going to encourage other creative people who've got ideas for festivals, got ideas for performances. We encourage them to develop those things and bring them to us so we can present them in the park.
And now, Julie, in your case, you guys were involved from the very beginning. You'll have actually your first concert as a part of the opening weekend, right?
It is. We have the Wailers, which is Bob Marley's band and has continued on through the years on Sunday afternoon. And
so you must have been involved in the planning pretty early.
I think we snuck in on it and we were excited.
Well, Tulsa Roots Music, I guess you've been doing events for a while?
We have been doing some concerts. We've used Tulsa Little Theater and other venues. My partner, Mike Coster, moved here from Santa Fe. His wife is the new curator at Philbrook. And he, Santa Fe had a regular outdoor, free-to-the-public music series. And when he saw the park going in, I think he had the same idea as you were talking about. What an opportunity. So the two of us kind of organized a presentation, and we're fortunate enough to get to speak to Stanton Doyle and Shirley Elliott and Chad Oliverson, and we kind of said, here's what we want to do. What do you think? And it's worked out beautifully. We've been thrilled.
Yeah. Now, how does the Trust partner in with something like Tulsa Roots? Are you guys working as partners, or is this something that Tulsa Roots is doing itself?
We have created an entire series, but we've had very generous sponsorship. Of course, George Kaiser Family Foundation has really made it possible for us. But the University of Tulsa is also online, Bank of Oklahoma. We've sought out some other sponsorship. And Shirley and the people at the Trust are kind of organizing overall the calendar, the technical aspect of it. And Mike Coster and myself are organizing our little piece of it. For example, in October, Brian Horton, who has Horton Records, is also doing a Saturday night series along the same lines as ours, but focusing on some really amazing local talent.
Mm-hmm. That's a new expanded role for the Trust, I guess.
It is. We've been presenting events at the Tulsa Performing Arts Center for 35 years, but we've created a friendship and partnership with the George Kaiser Family Foundation, which now has allowed us Chad Oliverson and myself to be kind of loaned out as staff and administrators and advisors on the development of the Guthrie Green and other projects we've worked with them on as well, including the Tulsa Awards for Theater Excellence, the Tate Awards, and some future things coming up in the Matthews Building.
Now, I understand it's not just Kaiser funding or trust funding. It's now National Endowment for the Arts funding, right?
It is. Yes, we got a wonderful grant, Our Town grant from the National Endowment for the Arts. It was a $50,000 grant, which has to be matched by local funds, which the Kaisers were able to do for the programming in the park, which will allow us to pay the artists that perform there. And that's important to us, to, as an arts park, to respect the contribution of the creative community and pay the artists who perform for us.
And that's one of the things I think is very critical. And where you see successful programs, they are paying musicians to be there as part of the sort of creating the cultural atmosphere of the city. And I'm really excited about this because I think this is another sign that Tulsa is moving ahead, because there's a sort of a divide between cities that do these sorts of things and cities that don't. And I'm glad to see that Tulsa's doing it. And it opens with a big, giant weekend, and we'll talk about that in just a second. My guests today are Shirley Elliott, the program director for the Tulsa Performing Arts Center Trust, and Julie Watson of Tulsa Roots Music, one of the groups that are working with the Trust and on the Guthrie Green to provide programming for this new park with an amphitheater that opens this weekend with a full weekend of music. And this is like this is going to be a big street festival. You're closing off the streets around the park. I think there'll be the first Friday Brady Arts District Crawl will be a part of that, the art crawl. And you're just going to have a full weekend of music. Tell us a little bit about this weekend.
Well, it was an important part of the thinking is to be a good neighbor in the Brady Arts District. So we wanted to open the park on a first Friday because there's a lot of people coming down now to participate in the Brady Arts Crawl, which stretches all the way from Main Street all the way over to
the ballpark.
Living Arts is in that as well. And the Zero Center, they're open on Friday night. So that's already become an important part of the culture down there. So opening on a Friday night just brings it all together. And our other partners are the Brady Merchants Association, who are also having a festival, companion festival, this weekend. So we're partnering together as a whole neighborhood, and we start off at 7 a.m. with our very first event, which is a kickoff for the United Way Day of Caring. Huh. And so that's going to get us up early and test our mettle out first thing in the morning, but we're looking forward to that because it's a great way to start with people in the community who are dedicated to helping others. Then we pick up again at 3 o'clock for our official ribbon cutting and begin music around 5 with Salzabor.
Mm-hmm. And then that evening you'll have the Tulsa Playboys, Brave Combo on Friday, and then you have music all weekend long. And then really, when you chose the music, I think you're just sort of, it's almost like a musical taste of Tulsa.
Well, it is. We wanted it to be local artists, local flavor, a lot of diversity in it, and actually, some of it has just kind of fallen in place for us as well. The Arts and Humanities Council is sponsoring a concert by Brad Richter and Victor Uzur at noon on Saturday. Living Arts has their new music concert at 2 o'clock with Little Ruby Moon. Come out and hear that. And then we have a band called Eleganza Musical that will be sort of Latin jazz with a vocalist. And then start at 7 o'clock on Saturday night with Wink Burcham and the Paul Benjamin Band. And then our headliner for Saturday night is Sonny Landreth. Mm-hmm. So that'll be a great blues night at the end of Saturday night.
Then you come back on Sunday with more events through the day.
Right.
The Wailers, what time do the Wailers play?
The Wailers are starting now at 2:30, which is a small change and going to play through. And there's also children's activities. I know Shirley was probably going to get to that. We'll have some regularly with our series, but Shirley has a lot partnering with Tulsa Children's Museum and a lot going on.
Fab Lab of Tulsa will be there to do some things. And we're bringing in a charming mobile puppet theater from Minneapolis, a group called Open Eye Figure Theater. And they do a little thing called Driveway Tour, where they have a little mobile theater, and they come up with live music and just charming puppet shows. So they will be there throughout the whole weekend doing multiple performances on the lawn.
Mm. And then I guess the finale will be The Tulsa Symphony.
Tulsa Symphony Orchestra.
You know, the old Philharmonic used to have Symphony at Sunset. This is sort of a revival of that sort of free concert to start and kick off their season.
It is. And the Tulsa Youth Symphony will play at 6. Mm-hmm. And at 7:30, we'll have a concert by the Tulsa Symphony Orchestra, which ends in a fireworks display around 9 o'clock. Yeah. So it should be a wonderful close to a big weekend.
Yeah, and a great start to a new facility here in the city. I assume you're going to be programming through the fall and then again in the spring?
Exactly. We've got about 8 weeks. We think we'll close around November 1st. November 1st is an important date down in the Brady District because it's the Day of the Dead Festival, which is has become a wonderful, huge festival out at Living Arts. That will be our last day open for the season, but a few things will be sprinkled in. But we've got more music planned, more local artists. Tulsa Roots Music Series continues, and we're also adding dock concerts, little happy hour concerts on Friday nights from 5:30 to 6:30 up in the dock area. So it'll be a smaller setting, another versatile use of the space, and more local artists.
About how many people can be seated in this amphitheater? Do you have any idea yet?
No. We're guessing because we haven't taken possession of it yet.
Right.
So we're anticipating, I think, a capacity in the park of about 1,200 mm-hmm. and in the dock area of about 150.
Yeah. Now, we should talk about the Roots series because this first weekend will be the very first part of your series. And you're basically look like you're, what, every Sunday?
We are. We are every Sunday after that in September and October.
Sunday afternoon concerts?
Sunday afternoons, basically with music between 2:30 and 6:30, between 2 and 3 national acts. We have a couple local acts thrown in there, too. And we also tried to keep with the spirit of the park, which is we tried to really book some diverse music. We want to have, you know, I think Kaiser Foundation feels the same way and Shirley does. We'd like to see every demographic down in this park. So we've tried to book a little bit of everything, and it's hard to hit it all, but we have some. Del Castillo is playing on the 16th, and that's actually La Semana del Sur Day, which is one of the local bilingual papers. And we have a lot of world music. We have a lot of folk and country, a little bit of country, a little bit of Cajun, a little bit of blues, across the board, really.
Mm-hmm. I see Beausoleil will be being on the 7th. They're frequently featured on Prairie Home Companion. You got the Zydeco Playboys at the end of October.
We do.
So a really good lineup of music.
We are so excited about it, and thank you. It's thrilling to have people recognize some of these bands because some of them are perhaps nationally known, but not every day on everybody's tongues. But we think anyone coming down will enjoy these. They're definitely geared family friendly. It's we're trying to reach everybody.
If you like our show American Roots, you'll probably like these bands because there's Tejano, there's Zydeco. You've got a little Latin. You got a little traditional folk.
We do
new folk, electric folk.
A little bit of punk in there with the Three Bad Jacks, which is a funny juxtaposition with Beausoleil, but we think it'll be a lot of fun. So.
Well, it sounds like it's a great lineup of bands. And is this the main series, or are you going to come back in the spring? What is the plan?
We would love to come back. And for now, I think everybody's sort of taking things a day at a time. But this is definitely for this fall, we're going to have these 8 weeks. And we've just tried our best to really give everyone a taste of what can happen at that park.
Yeah.
Rich, one other thing I want to mention is we have a lot of wellness activities going on in the park as well. The Downtown Y is sponsoring free boot camp nights on Tuesday and Thursdays at 5:30, and there'll be yoga in the park on Saturday mornings and on Wednesday evenings. And the Y is also sponsoring a family exercise event, kind of family Zumba, on Saturday mornings at 9. So it will be more than music, and I'm sure there will be art, visual arts in the future, but we've also got the wellness aspect, a beautiful place to come down and exercise in the park.
Now, we talked a little bit earlier about festivals. Have any festivals approached you about, making this sort of their home base?
Yes, but that's all top secret.
Oh, come on, just between you and me.
Well, I would say festivals, this isn't exactly a festival, but it's an important Tulsa event. The Tulsa Tough will be headquartering in the park.
Oh, that's great.
So in the future years, we hope.
Yeah, and I guess the fall is a time when a lot of times outdoor activities sort of taper off, but usually the weather is good enough that you can still be out in October and even these last few years, November. Mm-hmm. But next spring and summer, is this something that's going to be, you know, there'll be something going on every night or every couple of nights? What is the plan at this point?
Well, we're still figuring out next season, but we hope to open around April 1st, and there'll be music on the weekends, probably some noontime concerts, hope mm-hmm. to continue the happy hour concerts, and then it'll be a mix of special events that happen, you know, every 2 or 3 weeks, something kind of on bigger than usual, plus weaving that in with what our arts community wants to bring to the table. Because coming up this season, this fall, we also have an event by Tulsa Camerata and Portico Dance. So this is a chance for two local organizations have partnered to create an event that will happen in the park. Mm-hmm. And Living Arts is presenting a new music concert, and they'll be showing animation, a film out in the park. And also, I forgot to mention, Circle Cinema is participating on Thursday nights, starting next week with a film series on Thursday nights at dusk.
Mm, and just coming out and showing a film?
Right. Come out, bring your blanket, mm-hmm. yeah. come out and watch a film. The first one is Bound for Glory about Woody Guthrie. So.
Well, it sounds like this is going to be a much-used facility, and yes. I think that's the hope. And I think, as you were saying, you're being cagey about next spring. I think, well, you don't know, but maybe it's also, let's see how people take to this facility.
Yeah, we would love to take proposals, and we're still getting our website up and running. But GuthrieGreen.com will be a place where people can submit proposals for things to do.
All right. Well, Shirley and Julie, wish you great success with the Wailers from Tulsa Roots Music and everything but the kitchen sink from the Trust this weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, culminating with the Tulsa Symphony and then fireworks. Sounds like a great weekend and a lot of events to come. So thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you very much
thanks.
For having us on.
Shirley Elliott is the program director of the Tulsa Performing Arts Center Trust, which will be presenting music at the Guthrie Green, and Julie Watson of Tulsa Roots Music. They'll have an ambitious schedule of Sunday afternoon concerts throughout the fall at the Guthrie Green. The Green gets underway with ribbon cutting at 3 o'clock. The music gets underway tonight at 5. And also we should mention again, the Wailers will have a free concert Sunday afternoon at 2:30 at the Guthrie Green. You're listening to Studio Tulsa. Here's the comments of Jennifer Adolf.
Amid the noise and fury of today's partisan politics, we sometimes forget that America's government is our government, an institution guided by the laws, principles, and ideas we thought sounded pretty good over the years. We created it, and we have amended it. So if we're mad at the government, maybe we should really be mad at ourselves. Some people mistakenly view our government as something outside of our own making, a malevolent cancer spreading into our lives. They imagine the government as them, with we the people fulfilling the position of us. Yet, it is we the people who create, fund, and direct our government. Oddly, we hear the same faulty agreement from some of the folks we've elected to serve in that government. When politicians talk about cutting pensions for federal employees, or about reducing the funds seniors get back from what they've paid into Medicare, it's as though the people who built this country, our fellow Americans, are a bunch of greedy souls who contribute nothing, yet ask much. These are extreme generalizations, of course, sad caricatures that miss the truth. So let's focus instead on a few realities. In this vast, wonderful country, there are millions of industrious, thrifty, and entrepreneurial individuals. But there are also Americans who are lazy, untalented, and unambitious, and far too many who are troubled by drug addiction or mental illness. To be perfectly blunt, some of these folks don't deserve the money they get from the government every month. That's just how it is. That's reality, and there's no getting around it. But some years ago, we as a nation decided we didn't want destitute Americans to live in cardboard shacks any longer. Such squalor was happening all over, in places like Oklahoma and Appalachia, and from the Carolinas to the West Coast. And we were too proud of this great country to let that continue. We saw that it made all of us poorer when any American, either from bad luck or bad decisions, found himself starving to death in the richest country in the world. So we created a social safety net, the lowest depth to which a fellow American, any American, would be allowed to fall. We didn't do it because it made fiscal sense. Nor did we create such a safety net because it would show the poor, the unemployed, or the drug addicted the error of their ways. We did it because no American, no matter how unlucky, lazy, or unhealthy, should ever go hungry in this, the wealthiest country in the history of the planet. No American, no matter what his failings, should live in a cardboard box. As a veterinarian, I can assure you we treat our dogs better than that. So before we choose to destroy that safety net, we ought to ask ourselves why we created it in the first place. Imagine a destitute widow who drove a school bus in her younger days, or a Vietnam veteran, the widow's neighbor perhaps, who today lives below the poverty line. Neither may have done enough to ensure financial security in their later years. Both may be penniless except for the check that comes from the government every month, which means it comes from you and me. A check from Americans to Americans, because in the richest country on earth, no one should starve. I'm happy to send that check, because while I didn't drive that hypothetical school bus, someone had to. And I surely didn't serve in Vietnam. I didn't build the roads I drive on or wreck the power grid I use every day. Other Americans did those things, and those efforts helped make my America a better place. I'm thankful for them, glad to ensure that my fellow citizens have something to eat and a decent place to live, whether their contributions were great or small. If we want to make changes to our social safety net, say, for example, by incentivizing learning a marketable skill and returning to work, we need to remember that we can't all become Sam Walton or Bill Gates. But we are all Americans, and our contributions to this country matter, regardless of their size. We need also remember that, long ago, we decided that those Americans who could not, or in some cases would not, ascend to great heights should at least fare as well as the family dog.
Jennifer Adolph is a local veterinarian now pursuing a career in writing fiction. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. If you missed one of our recent programs, they're available online anytime at publicradiotulsa.org. You can listen to them online or download them at the iTunes store through the podcast. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.